Most people don't know how many financial accounts they have or their net worth. And when you're not paying attention, you're leaving money on the table. The solution is Monarch, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, link all your accounts for a complete picture of your financial health. You'll never need a spreadsheet again. Get 50% off your first year. That's just $50 total at monarch.com with code budget. That's monarch.com, promo code budget.
Welcome into another episode of Tailgate Talk SEC. I am Will Thomas. Week 9 preview on deck today. We had some great games. It wasn't even all the high profile ones. We had some of the lower, you know, games with less eyes on them give us a lot of good entertainment. So before we get into it, if you have been enjoying the content, please subscribe as I continue to try and grow my channel. But let's just get right into it. Auburn at Arkansas, 33-24 Auburn. Arkansas was in my best bets two ways. I had them -2.5, and I had their team total over 30.5. So they ended up with 24 points, right? So I was just one touchdown away. And they're up by 8 to start the fourth quarter. So I'm feeling pretty good because Auburn's offense has been really slow. They haven't been doing a lot, and I trust Arkansas to maybe go get one more score and give me both bets. Their fourth quarter drive chart is as follows. Interception, fumble, interception, interception. And one of those picks went back to the house for pick six. It was the meltdown of all meltdowns in Fayetteville. I mean, Auburn, to their credit, offensively, they ran the ball for 230 yards, 4.6 yards per carry. Jeremiah Cobb had a day, 28 carries for 153 yards. I mean, that Arkansas defense, it has been soft all year, and Auburn was able to exploit that in the ground game. Ashton Daniels, he came in for Jackson Arnold at half. They made a quarterback change finally, did Hugh Freeze, and he just kind of did what he had to do. He was 6 of 8 passing for 77 yards, also ran it for, I think, a little over 30 yards. But he was good. You know, I mean, he took care of the ball, and Auburn won the game with him at the helm, even though a lot of that is credit to their defense forcing 4 turnovers in the fourth quarter. For Arkansas, Taylen Green was 14 of 22 passing for 268 and a score with those 3 picks in the fourth quarter. The rushing game for Arkansas never got going. They're one of the best teams in the country in rushing yards per game. They only got 63. I mean, Auburn's defense is good, and they really stepped up. I mean, this game was just gross. This game was, it looked exactly like what you would expect a game between two of the worst teams in the SEC to look like. I mean, that's what we got. So just moving forward, Auburn goes home to host Kentucky, and Arkansas gets to host Mississippi State in 2 more games that are also between a lot of bad football teams. So we'll be looking forward to those next week. We won't be. We will not be looking forward to them. Tennessee at Kentucky, 56-34 Tennessee. The Vols had 11 drives in this game. They had 3 punts, 7 touchdowns, and then 1 8-minute drive to milk the clock all the way down at the end of the game. I mean, this was just a have-your-way day for Tennessee. Joey Aguilar played exceptionally well, 20 of 26 through the air for 396 yards and 3 scores. He had 3 receivers who went over 100 yards in this game, and Chris Brazel, Mike Matthews, and Braylon Staley. So not only is Aguilar throwing the ball up and down the field, but he's got 3 guys who we know can be explosive and carry the load on a certain day if someone else is out. Decent rushing attack, but, I mean, they were just having fun. Was Tennessee through the air. They didn't need to rely on Deshaun Bishop, Peyton Lewis. I mean, that offense was just, it's exceptional to begin with. And when you play against a team like Kentucky, who's not as good, and they're kind of dead in the water, I do think. I mean, Tennessee just flexed their muscles and had a great day offensively. For Kentucky, Cutter Bowie just keeps playing good football. He was 26 of 35 passing for 330 yards, 5 scores, and a pick. He had 2 receivers go over 100 in DJ Miller and Kendrick Law. I mean, this game was just a better team who was not being stopped all day. In Tennessee, you know, in Kentucky, they scored 34 points, which is great. Cutter Bowley, I do think he seems like a good answer for that team. Is I think it says more about the weakness in Tennessee's defense. They've been banged up at corner all year. Their secondary has not been 100%, and this defense grades out really poorly. And we saw that kind of happen again. Giving up 34 to Kentucky is not. It's pretty impressive to allow that to happen with how bad Kentucky's offense has been. But Tennessee, they get to go home, and they host Oklahoma, who is now going to be reeling for a win after losing to Ole Miss, which we'll get to in a little bit. And Kentucky, like I just said, they go to Auburn in what some people are calling the Loser Bowl. I didn't say it. I made that up. But let's move on to what is probably the most heartbreaking situation I've ever seen play out on a football field. Texas at Mississippi State, 45-38 Longhorns. These poor Bulldogs, man. I mean, they lost that game last week in Gainesville in just unbelievable fashion. This week was arguably worse. They were up 38-21 with 12:29 left at home. Your defense was playing good all day. Your offense couldn't be stopped. Mississippi State's next 3 drives, 3 and out, -9 yards. three and out, 9 yards, seven plays and a punt. Then their next drive was overtime, four plays for negative 41 yards. That's how their overtime went. They lost 41 yards in overtime. Granted, that's just because of how the fourth down play went. You know, it was do or die. But, I mean, as if the Arkansas collapse wasn't bad enough, this one was just horrible. And in this game, both teams, they combined for 135 rushing yards. That's where we were at. I mean, they threw for 356 and 381, respectively. 381 was Blake Chapin in Mississippi State. But Arch Manning, I mean, he could not have looked worse for more than 80% of this game. But something got figured out down the stretch. He ended up 29-46, 346 yards, three touchdowns, and a pick, which in the first half. Ryan Wingo, he finally popped for Texas. He had five catches for 184 in that Texas defense that I've talked about a lot. Seven sacks and nine TFLs to really get in Blake Chapin's head and disrupt that offense. But Blake Chapin, he is still slinging the ball around just as good as most people in the country. He had 381 yards, four touchdowns, and no picks in this one. Devon Booth was Mississippi State's leading rusher and receiver in the absence of Fluff Bothwell in that backfield. And their defense got to Arch five times and had 12 TFLs. Both defenses were really good at forcing negative plays and causing havoc in this one, despite what the total score would tell you. I mean, just pain is all it is. It's just pain. There's not much like the video of Texas scoring that late touchdown right in front of Brandon Walker. It's college football, man. It'll give you happiness, but man, will it kill you. Man, will it kill you. So now Texas, they go home. They get to host Vanderbilt. I don't know what to do with that game right now. In Mississippi State, they have to go to Fayetteville in what some people are calling the Loser Bowl 2. You know, next week we got a pair of these, Kentucky-Auburn and Mississippi State-Arkansas. I believe those games are airing on SEC Network Plus+, which you can't even watch. Alabama at South Carolina, 29-22 Bama. My recap for this game, excuse me just 1 second, please. Sorry, Pete Thamel tweet. Just want to make sure it wasn't Brian Kelly. My recap for this game, I have no stats. I have no stats. I have no info. I don't really have much analysis. It's a rant, so just buckle up. Shane Beamer's got to go. He has to go. I don't care, because that was coaching malpractice to lose South Carolina this game. After the turnover on the punt, which, by the way, should have been a flag on Carolina. Doesn't matter. It was a fumble. Carolina got the ball at the plus 28 with 13 minutes left, up 15-14. They drive down the field. They score with 10 minutes left. It's a nice little drive. So you're up by 7. It's 21-14 once Sellers crosses the plane. Go for two. They decide to kick the extra point and keep it as a one-score game, knowing full well who's on the other sideline. It's Ty Simpson and those receivers. You've been good all day. You have to understand who you're playing against and know that in that situation, you have got to go for two and go up by 9. The worst-case scenario, if you go for two, is that you fail to convert, you're up by 7. And then if Alabama goes down and scores like they did, they're not going to go for two. They're going to kick the extra point and tie the game. So the end result is the same. You're still going to be up by 7. They're not going to go for 8 points to take the lead. They're just going to tie the game in that spot. The best case scenario, you go up by 2 scores, and the last 10 minutes of that game go way differently. Because Bama, they could still score on that drive, but then it's either an onside kick or they just give it to you, and instead of being in a we need to go down and score situation like they were in when the game was tied, they can just be in a we're going to keep it safe, we're going to run this clock. And Bama's kicker is not good. He's just okay. Like, his numbers, I think, from 40+, they're really not good at all. So you can play that game and say, we dare you to make a long kick, or just hold on to the ball and run the clock out. But then also, when Bama got the ball back after the fumble, they let Jeremy Bernard score? That's what Shane Beamer said. They let him score, knowing that Bama's kicking was an issue. But just back to the two-point conversion, you have Lenora Sellers at quarterback. You're telling me that the risk-reward, where there's just about no risk, and then the reward is beating Alabama in this spot, you can't get 2 yards with Lenora Sellers? Like, was it just ignorance? Did he not realize that this is something that they could do? Or did he really think that going up by 8 was better than potentially going up by 9? I don't know. This was a disservice to the American people by Shane Beamer to not close this game out and beat Alabama and just cause even more chaos in the SEC. Tons of credit to Alabama for the comeback and finishing it off. I don't want to take away from that effort, because that drive by Ty Simpson and Bama, I think it was like 7+ minutes to go tie it up late, incredibly impressive. And the forcing turnover late. Credit to Bama for finishing it off. But this game, in my mind, was lost by South Carolina. Much more than it was won by Alabama. That is my rant. That is my anger. Let us move on. Let us move on to some of the bigger games. Texas A&M at LSU. 49-25 Aggies. Brian Kelly can't do this job for LSU. He can't. If you're going to get dragged up and down your home field like that in a spot like where you were at, back against the wall at home, got to have a game, it's embarrassing. Watching this game to me was like watching the end of the Creed movies. You know, I'm sitting there in the audience. I'm watching this fight go back and forth. It's two good fighters, both landing blows. Then all of a sudden, the music picks up and Creed lands a few, and you just know that he's about to become unstoppable and literally kill the other guy. I still just sit there and watch it happen anyways. That's what happened in the second half. LSU was winning at halftime, and then A&M just punch, punch, uppercut, kick to the face, you're dead, but I'm still going to keep hitting you. That's what the second half was like. Just overall in the box score, A&M was won the first down battle 24-18. They were 7 of 10 on third down compared to 2 of 13 for LSU. 426 total yards to 278 for LSU. 224-60 on the ground. They just dominated LSU in every stat. But the Tigers won the turnover battle 2-0 and never had a chance past the 10-minute mark of the third quarter. Marshall Reed didn't do a lot in the air for A&M in this game. He was only 12 of 21 for 202 yards, 2 scores, and 2 picks. That's a lot of twos. But on the ground, 13 carries for 108 and 2 scores. This guy is so lethal with his legs. And Concepcion and Craver, they found some space for some chunk plays. They didn't really blow me away in this game, but their speed was still evident. Their ability to create space in the middle of the field was still there. Cassius Howell, the most feared man in the SEC, and that defensive front as a whole had 7 sacks and 11 TFLs. Garrett Nussmeier, man, 22 of 35, 168 yards passing and a touchdown. 22 completions for 168. This receiver room is awesome. Why is that where it doesn't matter? He had negative 44 net rush yards with sacks included. So LSU's ground game was better than what the stats show because they're factoring in the sacks. Because Harlan Berry, who played great, by the way, and Caden Durham, they had 14 carries for 95 yards, which is 6.8 yards per carry. Those two guys ran the ball pretty well. Right, the running game was there with LSU, with Berry and Durham. This offense as a whole, first off, credit to A&M's defense, but this offense, they just could not sustain any sort of success. And LSU's defensive front, no sacks, only 2 TFLs. The gap between front sevens was stark in this game. So now LSU gets a bye, and now they get to go to Tuscaloosa. Is that that's a job-saving spot for Brian Kelly, maybe, if we don't get a notification in 2 hours here? And the A&M gets a bye also, and then they go to Missouri. And Missouri will be desperate in that spot, too. So A&M just took down a desperate Tigers team. Can they do another of that? Do that again to another desperate Tigers team in 2 weeks? We'll see. Vanderbilt at Missouri. 17-10 Vandy. The box score is going to lie to you in this game. Missouri had 9 more first downs, 111 more total yards, 34 more rush yards, 13 more minutes of possession. Loss. The third quarter was just miserable for Missouri. They got the ball at their plus 20 off of the deflected pick. In the first play, first down, first and goal at the 10-yard line. Stuffed, incomplete, stuffed. That was your second goal, third and goal, and fourth and goal plays at the goal line. And that fourth down was when Bo Pelizzi got hurt. And the next drive, you get the ball in plus territory again with Matt Zollers now in the game. 12 plays, 37 yards. That was that drive. I didn't know that was possible to run that many plays and gain that few yards and then miss the 29-yard field goal to take the lead. Missouri just could not stop. They couldn't get out of their own way. They missed so many opportunities in this game. Because Vandy's run offense, it was stifled by Missouri. McKillen Young had that 80-yard score. Outside of that, 25 carries for 56 yards for what was the number, but a very good rushing offense in Vanderbilt. Missouri did what they had to do defensively. Totally stuffed that running game. And Vanderbilt only completed 10 passes for 129 yards. Like, Vandy's offense was shut down by this Missouri defense, which is a great unit. But, I mean, obviously, Vandy had some really good playmakers in Trey Richardson and Eli Stowers. They both made exceptional grabs to each their own. For Missouri on offense, Matt Zollers was great. You know, 14 of 23, 138 yards, and a score. He played awesome in that situation, having to go in immediately when Pabula went down. And Ahmad Hardy, he woke up a bit. Kevin Coleman Jr. had a great game, but Coleman's numbers are a little inflated by the fake Hail Mary. I mean, called the ball to 1-inch line. This is just an absurd game. Yeah, another missed opportunity for Missouri. It's hard to blame as more for that one, but just you're literally 3 inches away from going to overtime on a Hail Mary after all of those missed opportunities. This game was just a total war. And with these two teams, the way they profile, it was never going to be pretty. And I just think that people were kind of like expecting like, oh, College Game Day, this is going to be fun. Like, no, it's going to be a slugfest where the first team to 17 wins. And that's what we saw. So now Vandy, they get to go to Austin now. That game's going to be a physical war as well. In Missouri, they have a bye, and then they host Texas A&M. Can that be their get-right spot to maybe stay in playoff contention? And then the final game we're recapping here, Ole Miss versus Oklahoma, 34-26 Rebels. Ole Miss, this was a pretty legit-looking performance. Trinidad Chambliss, once again, not efficient, but effective. 24-44, 315 in the touchdown, yes. Very good numbers for Chambliss. He found tons of guys open over the middle. That was the pattern I noticed. Like a bunch of these shallow crosses and digs, they were open a lot. And Chambliss was able to hit those guys for a lot of conversions. Rebels couldn't really run it. Just 2.8 yards per carry. Kaywan Lacy was able to score twice, but he really wasn't consistently effective. And they only allowed one sack. Oklahoma had 14 TFLs, which is a great number, but only one sack. So you're able to keep Chambliss upright, get him hit way less, which I think helps him continue to be effective late into that game. I'm starting to have some real questions about my guy, John Mateer. I mean, Johnny, I went to bat for you all summer. You're my Heisman runner-up because I had Lenore Sellers on my Heisman. I mean, this is just a nightmare. I'm stupid. But I had a lot of questions about Mateer in this game. 17 of 31, 223 and a touchdown. Lots of bad decisions and missed throws late in that game when Oklahoma was trying to drive to make a desperation comeback attempt. Just a bunch of missed throws, overthrows, just letting the ball sail on him. I don't really know what was going on. I mean, he'd been accurate in that so far in the season. He just couldn't get done yesterday. They found some running game in Xavier Robinson. 109 yards, two scores. He had that big explosive to really turn the momentum for Oklahoma. And everything is still in front of the Sooners. This was not a very encouraging loss. Everything is still in front of them. Their next 2 weeks at Tennessee and at Alabama, if you want to prove you're still a contender, go win those games. And then they host Missouri and the ghost of LSU at home. Three ranked games left, and then LSU to finish off. They can go 10-2 with one of the best resumes in the country. We'll see if they can. And Ole Miss, they're going to be favored heavily in every game they play. They do not leave the state of Mississippi the rest of the year. They get South Carolina, the Citadel, and Florida at home, and then they go on the road for the Egg Bowl at Mississippi State. 11-1 is right there. And that might be good enough to go to Atlanta. Definitely good enough to go to the playoff. But Ole Miss, everything is still right in front of both those teams, Ole Miss and Oklahoma. Ole Miss's path is just easier. But Oklahoma, they're not dead yet. They feel dead, but they're not dead yet. What I want to do now, new little thing I want to do every week, dudes of the week. This is not, I'm just going to be highlighting like a few guys who, this is not necessarily lighting up the stat sheet, but just like a football player, like a dude situation. You know what I mean? I'm also going to do it. First off, it's Alex McPherson. He went 6 of 6 on field goals to help them beat Arkansas. And if you guys remember, after the Missouri game, he missed a kick and then pointed to the heavens. And Dave Portnoy, a known kind person, he had called him out. You know, like you can't be praying to God if you miss a field goal. McPherson was asked about that after this week. And his quote response was this: "All I'm going to say is I praise the Lord whenever I miss and whenever I make. You praise him in the highs as well as the lows. That's what I'm going to continue to do. He's the reason I'm back on that field." Absolute dude, McPherson. He didn't go after Portnoy at all. And McPherson's story, I mean, it's incredible that he's playing football right now. And that he's making kicks, going 6 for 6 on the road in a spot like this. So Alex McPherson, dude of the week. Next one, Cassius Howell. He had 2 sacks against LSU. And if you guys are on Twitter, really at all, I'm sure you saw that clip of him screaming that LSU offensive lineman's ear off after running him up and down the field all night. Just that gave me adrenaline. Like, I thought for seeing that video, I could go out there and do the same things. I can't. I'm a quarter of his size. But, I mean, Cassius Howell, ultimate competitor, menace on the field, and that attitude, like, no one's going to stop him. Second dude of the week. And then third, C.J. Hurd at Vanderbilt. That play in the fourth quarter, Jamal Roberts had the ball for Missouri. I mean, and he just grabs him and just rips the ball out. That play set up Vanderbilt's go-ahead touchdown drive. Just grown man effort and play by C.J. Hurd, because Jamal Roberts is not a small man. That guy's a tank. He is a boulder. So being able to meet him in the backfield and just rip the ball away, just a pure attitude play that Vanderbilt has throughout their entire roster, that play really showed it. C.J. Hurd, third dude of the week. So that'll do it for our Week 9 recap. This was a great week of football. It was an incredibly entertaining week, that's for sure. A lot of close games. Very consequential, because now Vanderbilt, they got a plus odds or a positive chance to make the playoff. Missouri's got a lot ahead of them. Oklahoma, all of a sudden, they're out of room. Ole Miss, we think, might be going to Atlanta now. We're going to get an Ole Miss Texas A&M SEC championship. Who would have thought that in the preseason? I did not. I did not think that. So, a great week of college football, especially in the SEC. We'll be doing previews for Week 10. I cannot believe they're already in Week 10. We'll be doing that all week. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed the video, please subscribe, and I will see you guys next time.
Most people don't know how many financial accounts they have or their net worth. And when you're not paying attention, you're leaving money on the table. The solution is Monarch, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, link all your accounts for a complete picture of your financial health. You'll never need a spreadsheet again. Get 50% off your first year. That's just $50 total at monarch.com with code BUDGET. That's monarch.com, promo code BUDGET.